And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to give you the wheelbarrow song.
The wheelbarrow song?
The wheelbarrow. How does that go?
It doesn't go. You have to push it. Or perhaps you'd like to hear a different one. How about the prune song?
Well, how does that go?
Very regularly. Other titles include, of course, that well-loved melody, She Was Only an Architect's Daughter, But She Let the Barrow Surveyor. Other classics to add to that, It May Be Winter Outside, But Spring Is Coming Through the Mattress. I Can't Get Over a Girl Like You, You'll Have to Get Up and Make Your Own Tea. If You Knew Susie Like I Knew Susie, Your Father Would Be After You As Well. Oh, how we danced on the night we were wed, we danced and we danced because the room had no bed. And of course, there's always the little lost sheep on the mountain.
Little lost sheep on the mountain? Mm. Well, how does that go?
A drummer arrived at the dance hall and found that none of the rest of the band had turned up. So, being a professional, he played on his own, and the people danced away without paying much attention to him. At last, he was banging away on the drums. A lady came up to him and said, "Please, could you play Melancholy Baby?" He said, "Blimey, that's what I've been playing all evening." Down at our local Palais, there's a sign that says, "Mondays, under 21 night. Tuesdays, ladies only. Wednesdays, ladies and gentlemen are welcome, regardless of sex." A busker wandered into a village one Sunday morning, and as everyone was in church, he decided to play outside the church until they came out. His lively playing caused some distraction, and eventually the vicar came out to him and said, Do you know you're interrupting the service?" "No, sir, I don't," said the busker. "You sing it, mate, and I'll play it."
To divide music into two categories, popular and serious, is a false distinction, because the popular music of one period is the serious music of another. And some musical works defy such glib definition, but it's a convenient device for our purposes, because the humour of the popular music business is different from the humour of pretension which surrounds serious music. Noel Coward commented on the potency of cheap music, and few of us can live our lives unaffected by it. Even if we never listen to any, we still find newspapers full of stories of pop stars and their doings, their romances, riots, the depressing problems brought on by enormous wealth. Even a stage journal like The Times contains pop criticism and includes rock stars in its birthdays column. They're the depressing items with ages under 25. Popular music is an inescapable part of life and always has been. Mind you, that doesn't mean you have to like it. Here's James A.G. referring to Hollywood musicals.
"If music be the breakfast food of love, kindly do not disturb until lunchtime."
Here's another apt reworking of the same quote from D.J. Hurst.
"If music be the food of love, why don't rabbits sing?"
Or whatever popular music's like, it has a bad reputation for being frivolous. In the same way that a highbrow is suspicious of a best-selling book, he is also wary of a popular tune, however catchy. Often it's the very immediacy of such music's appeal that makes people think it must be trivial. They think enjoyment can't be that simple. Here are some shrewd observations on the subject by Mark Twain.
"I suppose there are two kinds of music, one kind which one feels just as an oyster might, and another sort which requires a higher faculty, a faculty which must be assisted and developed by teaching. Yet if bass music gives certain of its wings, why should we want any other?"
In fact, it's not just the quality of the music that makes people suspicious of it. It's the whole aura of the popular music business. It often seems over-commercialized, but I'm sure that's always been the case. As far back as the 16th century, theatre men were hoping to find that elusive big hit.
"They could neither of them think of a way of ending the first half of this musical, which is fantastically difficult. I mean, as Skelton said, he was quite right. For a first half closer, that's what they call it, you must have a hit, a palpable hit. Well, they thought of having summaries a-coming in, hotting it up as a galliard. Of course, that had been done. Skelton said, if only we could get hold of, well, say, another Agincourt song. Now, there was a song for you. They were still singing it at the end of the Hundred Years' War. And with cleaned up words, it sold 5,000 copies." Smaller populations, I mean. He said, "No, they're just not writing them like that anymore." Kit said, "Well, We don't know, do we? I mean, somebody may be somewhere in some squalid garret. How do we find out? I know. Let's run a festival. A festival of popular British playing songs. And get everybody to send their original songs into the old Bankside, which is what they did. And thousands of songs arrived. They read them through. They played them over. It wasn't a thing. Nothing you could possibly close anything with. So they were quite in despair, the two of them. They just didn't know what to do. And just at that moment, there came a knock at the stage door. And a scroll arrived by a special messenger. Kid opened it up and it said at the top, "Green Sleeves." So he sat back to listen while Skelton tried it over on the virginals. And after listening for a bit, Kid said, "Yes, all right, enough, I thank you, Master John." "Verily," he said, "verily, tis a charming roundelay, but I doubt me if it is commercial." Who wrote this, anyway? And a voice from the back of the auditorium shouted out, "We did." So, of course, they both looked out, and they could just make out a figure standing in the aisle, and they said, "Who are you?" And the figure said, I think this is the interesting part, the figure said, "We are Henry the Eighth. We are." So then of course, they realized that Green Sleeves was exactly what they wanted.
Michael Flanders, the slightly seedy atmosphere still clings to popular music, and this is tacitly recognized by most critics, including, apparently, Cowes. Here's a letter written to the Radio Times in the 40s.
"We find that our cows give their highest milk yields to the strains of 18th century chamber music, such as Haydn quartets. Music in the modern idiom often calms them into lying down at the wrong time. Swing definitely creates a kick in the bucket tendency."
That's one of the cows that swallowed a bottle of ink and mooed indigo. This disapproval of the popular is even more in evidence in church music. Though trendy vicars may hold their teeny bopper masses and London theatres be full of god rock musicals, most churchgoers favour the traditional and have strong views on what is proper. Here's a report from the Scottish Daily Express.
"When Three Blind Mice rang out from the belfry of Great Cornard Suffolk Parish Church, the bell ringer was warned against such levity. Then one Sunday there was a very poor offertory, and from the belfry came, 'Put another nickel in.' The bell ringer has been sacked."
Quite rightly. Yes, it's only occasionally that popular music is treated with respect. Mind you, it does happen. In recent years, the Beatles were given serious consideration. Tony Palmer described Lennon and McCartney as the greatest songwriters since Schubert. And one LP received this encomium in the New Statesman.
"The best songs to me are the love songs in which lyrical pentatonic innocence is modified but not destroyed by rhythmic ellipsis or harmonic ambiguity."
A statement of the obvious for you, isn't it? Still, it's an argument against those who knock the rock. Another is that pop music lyrics are often very meaningful. Do you remember a few years ago when pop went serious?
"It could be said that the song of protest has almost become the symbol of the age we live in, reflecting as it does the heart cry of the individual against the bungling incompetence of the contemporary establishment. We have a protest singer with us in the studios. Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce Flanagan."
"That's near enough for protesting, I think." "I'm only 33, but redundancy still struck me. Automation's come and left me numb with shock. I sat all day on a stool and just wrote the word Blackpool right through the middle of a stick of seaside rock. And where I'd like to know, in this age of the machine, is a man who writes in circles supposed to fit? Well, as far as I can see, it's the Royal Mint for me. Writing round the edges of the bobs and threepenny bits. Now, your machines are taking over. Oh, brothers, can you see? 1984 has here materialized. Soon you'll all have little buttons where your navels used to be. Because every one of you will be transistorized.
Roy Hudd. The changes in popular music fashion accelerated enormously with the invention of the gramophone. Let's have a definition from someone who was around in its early days, Ambrose Bierce.
Phonograph, an irritating toy that restores life to dead noises.
And then reproduces them endlessly on the radio. Of course, nowadays, a gramophone record has become one of the staples of broadcasting, and a sort of new game of one-upmanship has developed. The aim is to get your request played on the radio by writing to your favourite disc jockey. But such letters should be written with care. Here are some examples of ones which weren't.
Please, could you play a record of your choice for my mum and dad, sister Maureen, brother Lionel, husband Terry and son Paul, all of whom have a birthday this year?
Could you play me Stranger on the Roof before 10 o'clock in the morning? And please, could you play it quietly, because my husband works nights.
Could you play Engelbert Humperdinck's Please Release Me, because it has sentimental associations for my husband, who hopes to be back with us soon.
The trouble is that getting a record played may not be the end of your problems. A letter sent to the Daily Mirror.
I know what a thrill it is to hear one's request record played on the radio. I had my request played after plaguing the BBC for 17 years. Unfortunately, I was so excited I cried all the time the record was on the air and I didn't hear a note of it.
The saddest thing I've heard for weeks. Perhaps it'd be better to take advantage of popular music in another way and go dancing.
My neighbour, Mrs. Fanshawe, is portly, plump and gay. She must be over 67 if she is a day. You might have thought her life was dull, it's one long whirl instead. I asked her all about it, and this is what she said. I've joined an old-time dance club, the trouble is that there are too many ladies over and no gentlemen to spare. It seems a shame. It's not the same, but still it has to be. Some ladies have to dance together. One of them is me. So stately as a galleon, I sail across the floor, doing the military two-step as in the days of yore. I dance with Mrs. Tiverton, she's light on her feet in spite of turning the scale at 14 stone and being a medium height. So gay the band, so giddy the sight, full evening dress is a must, but the zest goes out of a beautiful waltz when you dance it bust to bust.
Joyce Grenfell. Dancing is one of the most common uses of popular music, and new dances are continually offered to the wiggling public. New dances have always been condemned. The 18th century reeled at the audaciousness of the waltz, and similar shockwaves have been caused by more recent examples. Here's a report from a wartime Daily Mirror.
We were shocked and surprised to hear on Sunday evening broadcast from Paris what purports to be a new dance called Le Chamberlain. This dance apparently involves the use of an umbrella, and we think you will agree with us that in times like these, our beloved Premier should be spared such exhibitions of bad taste.
Why bad taste? What did they do with the umbrella? The great thing about dancing is that it's a participant activity, and lots of people want to participate in music, not just to listen to it. The result evinced this remark from George Bernard Shaw.
Hell is full of musical amateurs.
And musical amateurs love to have a go, regardless of talent. Some of them see themselves as vocalists, a famous anonymous limerick.
There was an old fellow of Tring who, when somebody asked him to sing, replied, "Ain't it odd? I can never tell God save the weasel from Pop Goes the King."
No doubt it was such a performer, of whom Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote,
"Swans sing before they die. 'Twere no bad thing should certain persons die before they sing."
Other amateurs fancy their talent as instrumentalists, on the violin, perhaps. Here's an anonymous 18th century verse to a bad fiddler.
Old Orpheus played so well, he moved old Nick, while thou movest nothing but thy fiddlestick.
Or maybe they prefer the piano, defined thus by Ambrose Bierce.
Piano, a parlor utensil for subduing the unpenitent visitor. It is operated by depressing the keys of the machine and the spirits of the audience.
But shortcomings in talent can be balanced by enthusiasm and the thrill of performing in public. And if you're lucky, the local press will be there to review the performance and give you one of those cuttings that all artists treasure. Here's an example from a Sunday paper.
Music was provided by the pipe band of Queen Victoria's School and the brass band of the 1st Battalion Gordon Highlanders. There was a complete absence of wind.
One of those quiet concerts. Here's another from South Africa.
The concert held in the Good Templars Hall was a great success. Special thanks are due to the vicar's daughter who laboured the whole evening at the piano, which as usual fell upon her.
And finally, a report all the way from Massachusetts.
Not to be outdone by other artists, John Totten and his banjo, along with several friends and their banjos, will provide an instrumental interlude which itself should be worth the price of admission, which, by the way, is free.
After that excursion to the world of the amateur, it might be a relief to hear from a band of real professionals. Here's the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band with its all-star lineup.
Hi there, nice to be with you. Happy you could stick around. Like to introduce Legs Larry Smith, drums. And Sam Spoons, rhythm pole. And Vernon Dudley Bohay Noel, bass guitar. And Neil Innes, piano. Come in, Rodney Slater, alto saxophone. With Roger Ruskin Spear on tenor sax. Hi, Vivian Stanchel, trumpet. Big hello to Big John Wayne, xylophone. And Robert Morley, guitar. Billy Butlin, spoons. And looking very relaxed, Adolf Hitler on vibes. Nice. Princess Anne on sousaphone. Introducing Liberace, clarinet. With Donna Ted Armstrong on vocals. Lord Snooty and his pals tap dancing. In the groove with Harold Wilson, violin. Franklin McCormack on harmonica. Over there, Eric Clapton, ukulele. Hi, Eric. On my left, Sir Kenneth Park, bass sax. Great honor, sir. Specially flown in for us, a Sessions Gorilla on Vox Humana. Nice to see Incredible Shrinking Man on euphonium. Drop out with Peter Scott on Duck Call. Hearing from you later, Casanova, on horn. Yeah, digging General DeGaulle on accordion. Really wild, General. Thank you, sir. Roy Rogers on trigger. Julian Wildman of Borneo on bongos. Count Basie Orchestra on triangle. Thank you.
The Bonzo Dog Doodah Band's lineup. But let us for a moment leave this triviality and investigate the real power of popular music. Mr. Alfred Marx, with a moving recitation, Saved by Music, by Scotland's own poet and tragedian, William McGonagall.
At one time in America, many years ago, large grey wolves wont to wander to and fro, and from the farmyards they carried pigs and calves away, which they devoured ravenously without dismay. But as the story goes, there was a Negro fiddler called Old Dick, who was invited by a wedding party to give them music. In the winter time, when the snow lay thick upon the ground, and the rivers far and near were frozen all around, and when hurrying onward not to be late at the festival, he heard the howl of a wolf which did his heart appall. And the howl was answered, and as the howl came near, poor old Dick, fiddle in hand, began to shake with fear.
And as the wolves gathered in packs from far and near, old Dick in the crackling bushes did them hear. And they ran along to keep pace with him. Then poor Dick began to see the danger he was in. He remembered an old hut stood in the clearing, and towards it he was slowly nearing, and the hope of reaching it urged him on, but he felt a trifle dispirited and woe begone. And the poor fellow's heart with fear gave a bound when he saw the wolves' green eyes glaring all around, and they rushed at him boldly one after another, snapping as they passed, which to him was great bother. For the wolves pursued him without delay, but Dick arrived at the hut in great dismay, and had just time to get on the roof and play, and at the strains of the music the wolves felt gay. And for several hours he sat there in pain, knowing if he stopped playing, the wolves would be at him again. But the rage of the wolves abated to the subduing strains, and at last he was rewarded for all his pains. For the wedding party began to weary for some music, and they all came out to look for old Dick. And on the top of the hut they found him fiddling away, and they released him from his dangerous position without delay.
Our McThanks go to you, McAlfred. No wither has been left unrung. What are withers? Horses, haven't we? One aspect of popular music we have not touched on is the creation of pop idols, a business which still continues with unabated vigour. There have been so many. Do you remember the heady days of the 50s, with such names as Tommy Steele, Billy Fury, Wee Willie Harris, Terry Dean? Here's an extract from an interview with Terry Dean published in the Daily Mail. I will read the interviewer's question, which went, Terry, what's the difference between your act and Tommy Steele's?
Yeah, well, like Tommy's more of a happy singer, more merry-like. I do more of a jerk. I jerk a lot. Whereas Tommy is happy-go-lucky, I prefer a serious face mostly.
Makes you wonder where the pop stars of that era learnt their performing style and technique with interviewers. Of course, there were stables in those days where they could learn these skills.
Would you like to see one? Get one for you.
Major, some rotten hands pinch the strings of my guitar, look.
Got the guitar on back to front. How many times must I tell you? A whole point's away from you.
So much to learn, silent old time.
And you should know better than to enter this part of the flat. It's in your contract. Where the carpet begins, you halt. Now, which one are you, anyway?
I'm Sewell Rambo.
Not your real name, the name I gave you. For heaven's sake, I've embroidered on your T-shirt for you. Look there, man. Look there, there. Between the sunset and the coconut palms.
I'm Twit Conway.
I'm trying to remember it in future. Come over here now. Come over here and meet this. Come on, faster, faster, faster. I
can't walk any faster. These crepe soles, I'm so off the ground.
Stiff yourself against a wall. What have you done to your blue jeans?
I've had to cut my knees up, Major. I had to cut them out. They were so tight my kneecaps went all green.
Well, you're not going on television looking like that. You just borrow my fountain pen and ink and wear the flesh shows. This lady sitting in the armchair. She's from a newspaper.
Hello, I'm a journalist. I should so much like to do a story on you. I mean, you as a person. What is it... Tell me, what does it feel like to suddenly find yourself a teenage idol?
Well, it don't make much difference, really. I mean, I was idol before I was a...
the lad is trying to say, Miss Lisbon, is that success has not spoiled him. He's still the same twit he always was. Right, lad?
Yeah, that's what I should have said, yeah.
Of course it's what you should have said. Now, don't be nervous, lad. Just remember our lessons on how to answer press questions. Just bear in mind what you've been told to say.
Well, twit, do you want to stay a rock and roll singer all your life? I mean, what is your ultimate ambition?
We are just good friends.
That is the answer to another question. Remember, the answer to this one is, I want to become an all-round.
Oh, yeah. I want to become an all-round.
Entertainer.
Entertainer, yeah. My dream is one day to play Old Vic in Shakespeare.
You're fond of Shakespeare?
Aye?
Are you fond of Shakespeare?
We are just good friends.
All the voices were taken by Peter Sellers. The piece was written over 20 years ago by two young lads called Muir and Norden. Let's... Ooh! You've made my year. Well, let's conclude with a thought on popular song from a letter addressed to the Daily Mirror.
There are many songs in praise of beer and wine. Teetotalers like myself would appreciate songs for lemonade and other fine soft drinks. It would add to the enjoyment of gay teetotal parties.
At least brings us neatly back to pop. One, two, three, four.
Goodbye.